Hello and welcome to another Cake Wolf's Happy Hour. Today we are going to be doing something different than what we have been doing lately. We are going back to our roots and we are reviewing a movie.
Yay!
I'm joined with Miss Cake Bitch, as you can hear. And yes, reviewing a movie. How strange.
Oh, God. I've been wanting to do this for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are reviewing today a ghost movie because it's Ghost-tober. Mm-hmm. Ghost-tober. So High Spirits is on today's menu from 1988. We've got an 80s horror movie, horror comedy fantasy.
They have it as this a comedy fantasy because I guess it's not really all this.
It's got ghosts. It's got haunting moments. It's got some definite horror moments in it. More than some movies out there that claim to be horror. So I would say that it is a horror movie as well as the other things. And as I have said before, when you add horror to the menu or cocktail of a movie that also throws in genres such as comedy or fantasy or romance or adventure or action or whatever have you, those other genres, they eat the horror, and it's just what happens.
Yeah,
it's inevitable.
Yeah. So this is not going to give me nightmares,
but it does definitely have horror elements.
There are elements.
Now this is directed by Neil Jordan, and it's also written by Neil Jordan. This stars Peter O'Toole, Dara Hannah, Steve Guttenberg, as well as some other fun cast members. Now this movie, we're going to go ahead and move into this relatively quickly because we want give you a bit of content throughout this month. So we're going to keep it kind of short. Okay. I'm going to have you, Miss Cake Bitch, give us a synopsis of the film for the listeners so they know what they're going to be getting into possibly if they pop this in and watch it.
Well, just real quick, the reason I just made that "oh man" comment is it looks like he has a mugshot. The director / writer, his photo looks very angry. Mm-hmm. Guess he's not a smiler. But the synopsis of this movie is that Peter O'Toole's character, what was his name? I'm so bad at remembering the names of everybody.
It's quite all right.
Well, anyways, Peter O'Toole's character, Peter Plunkett. Mm-hmm. He owns a castle. It was left to him after his father died. And there's a staff, and it's supposed to be a hotel, but apparently nobody's coming. And the bank is about to relocate the whole castle to Malibu. Because the bank is very interested in the property, but not if it's in Ireland. So he is about to, he hangs up the phone, he's very despondent, he's about to hang himself, and his mother walks in, says, "Oh, taking the easy way out, I see." And he gets this genius idea. He goes, "Mom, how many ghosts are in this castle?" And she starts rattling off, I think she gets to 5 ghosts in the castle. And he's like, "That's it, that's it. We'll make this a haunted castle." So they hatch this plan to create a fake haunted castle as like a marketing gimmick to Americans, because we all know that Americans like marketing gimmicks and haunted places. So a group of Americans come into this castle and they put on this awful show. There's a woman that is pretending to be a banshee. And instead of scaring them, she falls on top of their bus and starts screaming, and the bus drives into a lake and starts sinking, and it's just a mess. So it gets off to this awful start. The only food they have to serve is whiting fish, which comes back later when there's a whistling whiting fish. And they're just all tired of it. By the time they go to bed, they're already fed up. And Steve Guttenberg and his wife in this movie, we're introduced to her on a plane, and we know she's a bitch because she doesn't want to have sex with him on the plane. This is how we know that she's an awful person.
This is played by Beverly D'Angelo.
Okay.
Her name's Sharon.
Sharon is a bitch because she doesn't want to have sex with her husband after taking 2 Valium on an airplane.
She is a bit of a bitch.
She is a bitch, but, you know, why would that be the thing that they introduce it with?
Well, I guess you could see it that way.
Distracting.
I think that she is characterized as a bitch more so because she's very short with everyone.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like uninterested in the world around her unless it's pretty much swooning over her.
Or to her benefit.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like she is the physical representation of every single awful tagline that you're going to see at like your local Walmart, youth t-shirt designs.
Oh God, those are the worst. Yeah,
basically like all of the youth of today, like just kind
shut
of
shut up and take me shopping.
Yeah.
Yeah,
basically.
So later on we find out that mm-hmm. she's actually at this castle because her daddy sent her, because he's the bank guy who wants this property in Malibu.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, I shouldn't leave it at all of the youth today. I should say, because, you know, that's not
youths.
True. But it's very popular today, I will say, to have that kind of mentality. I mean, I can't tell you how many commercials on the radio I hear that are promoting some
vapid
product.
And stupid.
Right. So promoting some product through the guise of teenagers, and the way that they are depicted in this are always like, I really don't care about what you think. I want things my way, and you're stupid, and look at me. I'm so cool.
So, like, real
because
talk, though,
I don't really care.
Like, real talk, though, I think these commercials are made by old people who don't mm-hmm. understand young people.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think youths today are as vapid and stupid as they make them out
right,
to be.
Right.
Like, I don't know why. It happens every generation.
Well, it's cool. It by these media standards, it's cool to be this way.
But see,
according to this.
Well, you know what? I live in a bubble. I've always lived in a
well,
bubble.
Well, let's go back to the movie. I'm basically saying that Sharon is ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, she's playing this just awful, yeah. heinous bitch mm-hmm. lady from the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, she's not unique. This character is, yeah. none of the characters are really all this unique.
Well, they are definitely done in a very comical way,
yes.
which works for the movie.
Yeah, it's all very stereotyped. Mm-hmm. None of the characters are new, but there's one scene, and I think we'll get to it later,
mm-hmm.
that's delightful and something like I've never seen before. Such an amazing idea.
Sorry I derailed you there. That was, like, completely senseless to do.
Oh, it's okay. I derailed myself earlier. So we're introduced to this couple. They're obviously having problems. Everyone goes to bed and they're tired and fed up at this place. And the chaos continues. The mm-hmm. staff is still like flying around outside and using mirrors to make like hologram effects inside different people's rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so the chaos continues. But in the meantime, the real ghosts are coming out. Mm-hmm. We're introduced to... is it Daryl Hannah? Is that the order of
yes.
her name?
Daryl Hannah and Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson. He's like mm-hmm. really, really young in this one. They're the two ghosts. And we find out that Mary Plunkett is murdered by her husband
mm-hmm.
On the same night as her wedding day.
Right.
Because he thinks that she is in love with someone else because her father arranged the marriage. There is nobody else. But Steve Guttenberg had gotten very, very drunk to deal with life that day.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees this loop happen. And the second time he witnesses it happening, he steps between Liam Neeson and Daryl Hannah's character and takes the knife in her place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nothing bad happens to him because he's alive and it's a ghost knife.
Right.
But she's able to break out of the cycle now because mm-hmm. she hasn't been stabbed in the ghost world.
Right.
So she obviously immediately falls in love with Steve Guttenberg because that's how 80s movies are, right?
Right, right.
And
I should say, like, there's a lot of great things happening in this movie during the faux ghost haunt of the night, because Peter O'Toole is basically the caretaker of this castle, and he loves the place. He's lived there his whole life. It's like a generational kind of thing. It's like an honorary badge to take the reins and make sure that the place thrives. He's not so good at business.
No.
And he kind of just drinks his days away and hopes that good things will happen. But he does have a lot of heart for the place and just kind of wishes that he could do better, but has a definite alcoholism problem. He is also responsible for the only place of employment in this town that is around
the villagers.
This castle. And so his idea
apparently this village is really only like 7 people big.
Right. and I mean, his idea for this, you know, granted it's kind of hokey that he's playing off the whole haunt theme, but I feel for Peter O'Toole's character and I kind of love him because of him putting his neck out and just really giving it his all for this one night. And he orchestrates all of the villagers to, you know, to each have their role, either whether they're playing a ghost or they're pulling the strings on something. And it shows just how much effort everyone's putting into this.
It's like a bad high school musical production.
In a way, yeah. There were some cool things. There's a couple, and one of them is a priest, and the other one is kind of like a harlot, and she's played by Jennifer Tilly. And this is fun because there's definitely a budding romance between the two, and the priest is kind of like, oh, I'm, you know.
Well, he didn't take his vows yet.
Yeah,
so he's not
I'm getting ready to take my vows, and I got to be a good boy. And she's, well, you know, she's Jennifer Tilly. She just breathes sex. So there's one moment where her bed starts to spin, and she's calling for the priest. He comes in the room, gets on the bed with her, and starts reading from the Bible. And the bed starts spinning too fast, so he kind of loses the Bible, and they just end up holding each other, and he's like trying to find where to put his hands and not look down at her giant tits. Some fun things like that. Another couple has a paranormal investigator, his 2 children, and his wife. And the paranormal investigator doesn't believe in any of this, and he's just disapproving things left and right. At one point, there's a villager that's inside of a suit of armor, and it, like, hands his wife.
Wait, wasn't it his mother? Wasn't it Peter O'Toole's?
Yeah, yeah, it was Peter O'Toole's mother, and she hands the paranormal investigator's wife some, like, a nightie.
Yeah,
because she's getting dressed. And the paranormal investigator eventually just says, no, I don't believe that this is a ghost. And he grabs a sword off of the wall and starts fighting this old woman in a suit of armor.
There's another funny part where they try to trick him by using this, like, mirror trick.
Yeah.
And his wife is laying in the bed, like, trying to seduce him. And he turns around, he goes, this is the most pathetic display. Yeah. And she gets really offended.
Because she doesn't see the hologram.
Because the hologram is behind her.
There's a lot of fun stuff going on while they're doing their little act.
Yeah, I was just trying to keep it
not really working out.
Short, but our synopsis is running kind of long anyway. I can't remember where I was now.
I really just love it.
Yeah.
Because it really establishes how much heart is put into this place. And it makes you care for Peter O'Toole and the villagers, and you want to see them succeed.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, yeah. They're very lovable characters.
And Steve Guttenberg's wife, Sharon is terrible. She is actually the daughter of the man who is going to be moving this castle to Malibu.
Yeah, the reason she's there is because he wants this castle. Because he hates the Plunkets.
That's all.
That's it.
And she's basically just there to say, hey, Daddy, yeah, they're not really doing anything good with this castle. You should really take it.
Yeah.
And she's just awful. She's just there to be terrible. But you had left off where basically we had Steve Guttenberg's character, Jack.
Oh, he took the knife.
Getting the stab.
Yes.
Yeah. Which broke the kind of like purgatorial loop.
The loop that they were in. So obviously this ghost is trying to convince him that he needs to be with her forever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because he broke the curse that she was in. And in the meantime, his wife, Steve Guttenberg's wife, Sharon, has also seen Martin. Martin shows up in her shower. Mm-hmm. And she assumes that it is...
Martin is Liam Neeson.
Yes, Martin is the ghost man.
Yeah.
He shows up in her shower, and she assumes that it's her husband, asks him, I can't remember, to, like, get her back or something.
Yeah, and make yourself useful, scrub my back.
Yeah, and so...
And this is a wonderful scene, because right before it, we have Daryl Hannah telling Steve Guttenberg that the reason why she didn't want to have... sex with Liam Neeson's character is because he sharts.
He squishes.
And we open the scene where Liam Neeson...
Oh, and his feet smell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We open the scene where he's in the tub with Steve Guttenberg's wife, and the first thing that he does is he burps, and then he instantly sharts and shits himself. It's wonderful.
We both looked at each other like, what's squishing mean? What's squished? And then Matt caught that he actually, like, shit himself in the shower.
Which is wonderful.
Dude, like, that alone, that woman would never fall for him.
No.
Like, Sharon would never be like, yes, this is the one I want. But for some reason, his disgusting, very sexually rapey sort of persona turns her on, because this is an 80s movie.
Right.
And so there's this back and forth where she's pretending to be repelled by him. And he's like, oh, God, what a woman, what a woman.
Yeah.
And, like, just fawning over her. He thinks that she's just the best thing ever because she's awful.
Well, what I love about his character is that he doesn't put up the farce. Like, a lot of guys, when they're going after a gal, they'll put the mask on. They'll pretend to be all nice. Then when they get the woman, then they start shitting their pants. But no, he's shitting his pants right off the bat. So you know what you're getting with him.
Well, he also, doesn't he say, yeah, I know I'm dead and I kill my wife, but you gotta look past that or something like that in the movie. Like, it's... The whole movie is over the top. There are definitely some sexual consent issues if you are kind of, like, triggered by that. But again, it's an 80s movie, which, you know.
It's so subtle, though. Like, I'd never picked up on it as a kid. And as a 35-year-old man, I didn't pick up on it until you pointed it out.
Well, yeah, and it's just in the forefront of my mind.
Yeah.
Right now. So, like, I picked it up and I was just like, I know this was, like, a product of its time.
Right.
I mean, it was the 80s. I don't think there's a single 80s movie that is remotely going to stand up the test of time on that front. So, if you can look past that, this is a really, really fun movie.
It is.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't really want to spoil the end of the movie because I feel like this one might be a movie that people have not seen.
Sure, sure. I mean, basically what we have is a budding romance between Liam Neeson and Beverly D'Angelo and Steven Guttenberg and Daryl Hannah.
Yeah.
And it's basically Liam Neeson wants Sharon dead. So that he can be with her in the afterlife forever.
Yes.
He doesn't just want her once. He wants her all the time. And it's kind of like not Wile E. Coyote. Like in the old Looney Tunes cartoons, we had that wolf character that was always, like, fawning over the women. And he's got the, like, hearts in his eyes. And he's always pounding on the ground and howling in the air. And that's kind of like how Liam Neeson is. Or Pepe Le Pew, yeah. Just more, like, aggressive about it. And I love it. And then we've got Steve Guttenberg's character, Jack, who's going after Daryl Hannah. And he... is just kind of there for the one night stand kind of thing at first, I think. He does profess his love to her, but he seems like he's more into the passion than anything else. There's one night of the year, which is All Hallows Eve, when the ghosts become physical again. And then Daryl Hannah and him get it on. And
although Again, this is the part where she's saying no, no, and then goes a little to the right. So this is what I'm talking about. It's all like very, it's stuff I would have never thought about 10 years ago.
And when they have sex, you know, they have a great time and whatnot, blah, blah, blah. Then he wakes up after falling asleep with her and she looks like a corpse.
Right. She's gray, frankly.
And
he has very little hair.
And he doesn't want any more of that.
He's
so it's
freaked out.
It feels like the whole, like, you go to bed with someone when you're drunk and then you wake up and they're not quite how you remember them scenario.
Well, here's the thing, though. He was reading that book and it's all like pure hearts can be saved sort of thing. And then he's just like, oh, I don't know about this. Maybe this was a bad idea. And then he, like, basically backs out of this whole, oh, I love you. I love you so much. Let's do this. I want to be with you thing. Just because she lost a little hair and her skin got dried out.
Mm-hmm. There's some really, really cool haunt scenes in this movie, too. While this, like, budding romance is going on, the ghosts are keeping other people occupied throughout the film. And there are so many really great horror movie moments of haunting that are better than a lot of ghost movies that are straight horror. Honestly, they're that good. There's a paranormal investigator that's like looking around the castle trying to find out if the place is indeed haunted. He comes across a fish head mounted on the wall, and
like those singing fish.
Yeah. And he looks inside of the mouth, and you know something's going to happen, but a bloody, disgusting hand comes out and grabs him by the neck and starts choking him. And at one point, the most creative...
But when the hand lets go of him, it just, like, waggles its finger at him and goes back in the fish.
There's... one of my favorite scenes, and it's one of the most creative things I've seen in a horror movie, is we've got this theater stage.
I was hoping you would get around to this.
And the theater stage was planned for entertaining the people at the castle, and they used all of these, like, wood cutouts of waves and mermaids and things, and the ghosts haunt that theater stage and all of the props, and it's very weird. There's a scene where everybody's trying to convince themselves that the place is not haunted and all they have to do is ignore the ghosts. So the ghosts all get together and basically make this really crazy haunt. And the theater stage starts moving on its own with all of the wooden effects moving across. And it seems like, you know, waves crashing, and at one point... a big whale jumps in the air, and it's, you know, it's just a wooden carving of a whale, and it lands into the waves, and this big splash comes out. That's another wooden carving. But all of the things that are happening on the stage are actually happening in the bar where the people are as well.
To
so
the
you'll
audience,
get
yep.
like the wind blowing, you know, like a cardboard kind of wind effect, and then it'll actually happen in the bar, and people are like moving across the bar, blowing around when the water splashes. There's a big tsunami wave that comes through the bar, and when the whale comes out and flaps its tail, it actually. Like
the tail actually comes out and lands on a table.
And all of the effects that are happening in the bar look very real. Like it looks like a real whale's tail. And real water comes down. And it gets just absolutely crazy. It just keeps amping it up until a giant squid comes out and actually pulls one of the children of the paranormal investigator's family into the theatrical wood carving set. And the boy, it shows the transition of him, like, becoming a wooden boy. And then they have to throw
a real life preserver
from the bar into this wood carving set. And it turns into, like, a wood carved life preserver. It goes on the boy, and they're pulling the boy back to reality.
It's
crazy.
Amazing. I mean, if...
I don't even know
no
if I
other...
described that right, but it's so
it
crazy.
Like, if there is no other reason you watch this movie, you legit need to watch it for that scene.
They've got a lot of creative
It's so wonderful.
Talent behind executing these haunts. And there's even one that where they used some light CGI to show like basically bricks moving off of the wall and just floating away to reveal this giant...
Why is there masonry floating by?
This giant catacomb behind the wall where all of the family members of Peter O'Toole throughout the generations come out to basically say, hey, we're here and we're going to get some shit done.
We have some grievances to take up
with. It's great. They even
family
have...
Family reunion.
At one point, a scene where people are running through the woods to try to escape, and these spirits, because all of the spirits are trying to keep them at the castle until this certain thing can be resolved. That's a plot point of the film. And these ghosts that are like floating through the woods look like they're straight out of Ghostbusters. they're awesome.
Like skeletal.
Yeah.
Ghost things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they were early CGI.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, this movie was actually really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Despite the problematic themes in it, it was still a very fun movie to watch. And that scene alone with the theater is like hands down one of the most creative things I think I've ever seen in a movie.
There is a lot of great stuff here, and as you're watching it too, we're tying this into the Wraith games that we've been playing lately. There's a lot of things that are interesting that I was drawing lines to, like, oh, that kind of applies to Wraith. Like, there's this thing where Daryl Hannis calls it scalping, and she's just running her hands through Steve Guttenberg's body, and it looks kind of sexual. And then she gets tired.
Well, it's supposed to look sexual anyway.
She gets tired and has to, like, sit down and relax afterwards. And, like, wraiths can move through people and things, but it actually hurts them. It hurts their corpus, which I thought it was interesting. And the whole, like, aspects that some wraiths have to repeat their deaths over and over again.
Yeah.
And they had that. There's some haunts that are in here that can be applied to certain things, that powers that wraiths can perform. I think I'm just, like, got Wraith on the brain.
Yeah,
but,
you definitely do.
It is a great film, though.
Are wraiths sparkly?
No.
Because, so this is the thing that stood out to me was Liam Neeson's character. Is it Liam Neeson or Liam
Neeson?
Nielsen?
I think it's Neeson.
Anyways, so... He's laying in bed trying to seduce Sharon, and he's just got glitter all over him. And I was like, is this where they got Edward Cullen's look from?
They did make him more gray toned.
Yeah.
And then they've just put a ton of sparklies on him.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Cullen clan.
I mean, Daryl Hannah had some, but... Dude,
yeah, he had a lot. Like,
lot.
I didn't even notice it on her, maybe because it was just supposed to be, like, soft on her.
Like a male stripper.
But
that
he
never
was
saw the sun.
Covered in glitter everywhere. It was so strange.
Yeah.
I think Twilight ripped off this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I love this movie. I would say that. Well, I'll let you go first. Out of a 10, like 1
okay,
to 10.
Okay, we're doing 10.
1 to 10.
I would give it, I'd probably give it a solid 8.5 because it was like a junky, fun movie to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even with the problematic themes, I personally can just be like 80s movie and it wasn't like so creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would give it an 8.5. I really enjoyed it. And I mean that theater scene alone probably gave it, like, 4 of those stars.
Yeah. I'm right with you at an 8.5. I think that's a pretty darn good score. I love the movie. I saw it a lot when I was growing up. My mother introduced me to this, and she didn't introduce me to many horror movies. But
she liked The Nun.
She likes comedies. So if it was a comedy horror, that was fine with her. She really got a kick, out of that nun scene. So there's a scene where the priest to be is watching Jennifer Tilly basically put her...
She's, like, stretching in a negligee. Like, no woman does that.
Yeah, she's wearing stockings and panties and a bra, and she's stretching.
A tiny slip.
Yeah, and he's just staring into her window while praying, but he keeps looking at her. Yeah. And then these really creepy-looking demonic nuns come out of the floors.
Are they demonic, or are they just weird?
I mean, they have black faces with glowing eyes. And their nunnery gown kind of sticks out to the sides,
yeah,
all wispy.
They kind of look like Yoda.
They're very creepy looking. And they just come out of the floors and the walls, and then they just fly at him as his pants start lighting on fire. There's smoke coming off of his pants.
Yeah, his crotch is on fire.
And then they push him out the window into the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do the same to Jennifer Tilly because I think the ghosts are...
She comes to check on...
The main theme of this movie is the ghosts want people to fuck, basically.
Well,
they
want to see the romance happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've been dead for so many years. Things get boring, I'm sure. And they haven't had any visitors to the castle in a while.
They're like, oh my God, finally we get to see some porn.
They're like, there are people.
Just fuck.
Let's make them all fall in love.
I suggest you guys go see this one.
Great.
It's a strong movie.
Don't trust Rotten Tomato. Apparently it has like a 23% on Rotten Tomato.
Oh, that's shitty.
And it apparently did not do well when it came out.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, another movie
like it lost money.
Another movie that didn't do well that was around this time as well was Nothing But Trouble with Chevy Chase and Demi Moore.
Oh yeah.
Dan Aykroyd. Oh my God. John
so
Candy.
So many names.
Yeah. It was such a great movie, and it's got these giant mutant hillbilly baby things that dance.
Haven't made me watch this one.
The movie at one point breaks out into a rap. Fest, just like out of nowhere,
God.
These rappers come in and start rapping, and the actors stop acting and just dance while there's a rap video going on, and it's 80s rap, and it's super bad, but it's fun.
What is this called again?
Nothing But Trouble. It's basically about people getting stuck in a town that's not going to let anybody go that goes inside of it, and Dan Aykroyd runs the town. It's got a very spooky feel to it. It's definitely a horror comedy.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd has this nose that looks exactly like a dick. It's like this prosthetic nose that's meant to look like a cock. And there's a scene where he's eating this really slimy sausage and his cock nose keeps getting in the way. And it's like, but the sausage and the cock nose keep bumping into each other and the slime's dripping off of both. I mean, it's like so weird.
So 80s was a little bit homophobic too, is what you're telling me, because early in this movie Jennifer Tilly is talking about her hairdresser, her Satan worshiping hairdresser boyfriend being into dead gerbils, and how was she supposed to know he was gay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another thing.
Being into dead gerbils.
That's the only thing I caught in this movie, but still I was like, oh, that's pretty. Did she say that? Like, that's pretty homophobic.
I mean, you know.
And sad.
Yeah.
But,
whatever.
Yeah. That was the only one I caught, though.
It's a great movie, though, at the end of the day.
I mean, it's a fun.
I think you can find a lot of laughs in it. Highly suggest it. Go ahead. Give this one a try.
Yeah. If they're listening to our show, they're not easily offended, most likely.
Yeah. After that hillbilly thing I did with Dustin, we probably lost a lot of listeners. So thanks again for joining us. And catch us next time. We'll be coming at you with something ghostly through this month of October that we're calling Ghosttober, that we are not promising to do the 31 days of Halloween, but it might happen.
I think that when we do the show title for this, we should just put movie review in all caps.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, we'll catch you guys next time. And any last words, Miss Cake Bitch?
No, I don't have anything else to add.
You know what keeps wanting to come out of my mouth? And I'm just going to say it because at one of these times it's going to happen,
Lord.
And then it's going to feel weird. Every time I end the show, I've been doing this for that long that I want to end it as if I were talking to my mother.
Whoa.
Because I always end phone calls with my mother the same way. I say, all right, I love you. I'll see you next time. And That's what wants to come out of my mouth.
Oh, like, so it's not just when you record with me. It's like every time you record.
Yeah, it's like...
Okay, because I was like, why are you bringing this up? No. Because that one day I was rubbing your feet before you got up for work. And you were like, I don't want to go to school,
We
Mom.
Gotta edit this out. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, I might as well just say it, you know? All right. I love you guys. I'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you then.
Get out! Last chance, told you. Get out! Get out! What you got?
Excuse me now!
Hey, what is with you guys? How about shutting up for a change, okay? I already fed you.
Beware the moon, lads.
Yeah. What the hell was that all about?